I'm Dave Freund, and this is The Next Page, and Marissa is still out on maternity leave. Not too many more weeks and she'll be back, but I have a special guest with me, Charlie Borgognoni from the Central North School Boards Association. Charlie, welcome.
Thanks, Dave. Good to be here.
Glad that you agreed to have this little conversation with us. So, Charlie, tell us, what's the Central New York School Boards Association?
The Central New York School Boards Association is essentially an organization that works with boards of education. I call our mission a 50-50 mission. Okay. About half of what we do are things like professional development, leadership development, state-mandated trainings. Mm. As an example, newly elected school board members are mandated by New York State to take two specific trainings within their first year in office. Okay. We provide those types of things. The other 50% of our mission is what I call advocacy work, and that's largely in terms of school districts and public education's needs, largely in Albany. We are very focused, more than on any other issue, on New York State aid to education.
Okay.
New York State unquestionably spends the most money of any other state in the United States on education. No argument there. But unfortunately, we have one of the most regressive distribution systems
in the United States. Explain that, Charlie, because I've heard the term, but people may not know what it means.
Right. Distribution of state aid is measured on a lot of different things, but primarily it's distributed to address needs in the community, to help a community be able to pay the expenses to operate their public schools, and hopefully provide somewhat of a level playing field in education from district to district to district across the state. You know, unfortunately, and this isn't true only in New York State, it's true anywhere in the United States, a state budget is a political project, a political document, you know, which means that legislators get very much involved in advocating for their own areas.
Sure.
And sometimes political deals are struck behind the scenes. And in New York, for over 40 years now, we've had a distribution agreement, I guess is what you could say, in place, called the Shares Agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And that guarantees regions of the state a certain amount of what the pie is in terms of education aid. For instance, Long Island gets 12% every year, whether they need it or not.
Mm.
New York City gets about 24%, 25% of the pie. And the rest of it is kind of distributed in the other regions of New York State. The other aspect of the regressive distribution situation that we have here in New York is that the measures that are used in the formula, and we have a very, very complicated formula to disperse the funds out there. If you can imagine it is an algebraic expression that is 74 pages long.
Wow.
So you can imagine the ins, the outs, the ups, the downs. And that is tweaked on an annual basis to fit those political needs that I talked about. But within this document, it is supposed to take into account a community's ability to pay.
Okay.
And should focus on certain other measures, poverty being a big one in New York State. And poverty, by the way, exists. We're here in Central New York. Even our wealthiest communities, if you will, our most well-off communities here in Central New York, have pockets of very deep generational poverty in them. And the measures that are the measures that are in the state formula as it exists right now to determine poverty are outdated.
Okay.
They're based on the 2000 sentences.
I see.
And therefore, money is really not flowing to those districts that need it the most.
Okay.
You know, to give you an example, there are districts in certain parts of the state where high income wealth, high property wealth, which mm-hmm. are the primary measures of
sure.
how they divvy up the
sure.
The state aid pie. By rights, that school district shouldn't receive any state aid.
Mm-hmm.
And yet through this shares agreement,
sure.
they get money, and that money usually goes to programming that puts them very much ahead of districts
above
that don't get that. Things,
yeah.
things such as advanced placement, advanced
okay.
college placement
yep.
courses, baccalaureate programs,
mm-hmm.
extracurricular activities,
sure.
all the frills that many of our districts in this region can't afford to do.
Right, right. And I think it probably ties into the importance, you know, when you fill out your state income tax, they ask you the school district
mm-hmm.
that you're in. And I remember because our school district that where I was on a school board was Onondaga Central,
right.
and we live in Onondaga County.
Mm-hmm.
We had issues where people were just clicking Onondaga as the school district
right.
mistakenly.
Yeah.
And it skewed the numbers against us.
That's exactly right. And when you have a distribution formula in the state that's unwieldy as the one that
sure.
we have now, those kinds of mistakes happen all the time.
Okay,
yeah.
okay. So thank you for that explanation
mm-hmm.
on the state aid. So how did you end up the executive director of the Central Newark School Boards Association?
That's an interesting story. You know, my career has been rather diverse.
Okay.
I graduated from Syracuse University. I went to the Newhouse School at Syracuse University. And my first job when I got out of college was actually working in the New York Yankees farm system as a public relations.
Which had to be fascinating.
It was absolutely fascinating because I was in the job from December of 1974 through the end of the 1979 baseball season.
Okay.
And if you recall, as
there were
Yankee
a few
fan,
events.
Well, they were winning World Series. They were
right.
winning pennants. They were in
yes.
three World Series over those 5 years.
Yeah.
And while most of my time was spent with the Yankees AAA team, which was based here in
sure.
Syracuse, I did have opportunities to participate in
okay.
things with the big league club.
Good.
And get involved there. So as a 21-year-old kid who loves sports...
Were you a Yankee fan?
Oh, yes.
That's a
oh,
lot better than being a Boston
a
fan.
Huge Yankee fan.
Okay, good.
That was a great first job. Not even so much for working in an area that I understood and loved and
sure.
whatnot, but it was one of those jobs that you had to do many different things.
Okay.
It wasn't just public relations. It was promotions. You know, you'd go out and sell advertising.
Sure.
You know, you would do community relations.
Okay.
And it really laid a base for what the next steps in my career would be. The next 5 years, and up until I got into the corporate world, you know, my career seemed to be about 5 year spans.
Okay.
Which was very interesting.
Sure. Sure.
But my second career was. In government and politics.
Okay.
I was a staffer in the New York State Assembly for the late Mel Zimmer,
mm-hmm.
Who was the senior Democratic Assemblyman from the Syracuse,
yep.
Onondaga County region. And I worked on his staff. Again, very, very versatile responsibilities. I did speech writing, public relations work,
mm-hmm.
but in addition to that, I managed four or five specific issue areas.
Okay.
And was responsible for legislation and tracking legislation and, you know, doing any work that we needed to do
mm-hmm.
in those areas for our district and
okay.
our region. Some of the areas included energy, economic development,
mm-hmm.
And education. That's where I kind of got my first taste
okay.
of public education.
Great.
At the time, our assembly district represented the Syracuse City School District, the Salve District, and the Lincourt School District. So that was a little kind of baptism.
Sure.
That, you know, I didn't know that 20 years later, 25 years later,
right.
was gonna.
And from big to little, from Syracuse to Lincourt, those are kind of some extremes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Very good.
And a lot of that, by the way, was working with our districts in terms of their state aid needs and helping to direct appropriate funding to them at that time. After doing that for 5 years, I decided it was time for another career change. And I started what ended up being a 20-year career in corporate life.
Okay.
I went to work for Bristol-Myers Squibb here in Syracuse and was with them for 14 years here in Syracuse, where I led the communications and government affairs function for the subsidiary that was based here. Our global manufacturing organization was actually based here for a number of years.
Right, right.
And the work I did rapidly got outside the bounds of Syracuse.
Sure.
I did quite a bit of international travel and was really responsible for many different aspects in terms of government affairs, communications, community relations. For our operations, which were basically throughout North America, the Caribbean Basin, and Europe.
Okay.
So those were areas where I spent a lot of time over the course of 6 or 7 years doing that. Based on that experience, I then went to the corporate headquarters and spent almost 4 years there, where I led the corporate affairs function, which was, you know, I would have to say that was probably the most fascinating aspect of my career to this point, because the responsibilities I had were again very, very diverse. We were responsible for all of the non-product related communications. So things that came under the umbrella of the corporate affairs department included such things as community relations for the corporation globally, all of our financial communications. So I dealt a lot with Wall Street, financial media. I sat on deal teams for Bristol. In fact, during the nearly 4 years I was doing that, we did about $20 billion worth of mergers, acquisitions, and divestitures. And, you know, the communications aspect in that is very diverse. You know, for instance, you spin a company off, you know, you've got to go in and make sure that folks are on board with that we, you know, that we maintain some continuity there, and all of that. And the divestitures and acquisitions are just as fascinating.
Sure.
You know, sitting on a deal team, any given deal team where you're, you know, where you're talking about a merger or acquisition or divestiture, you know, is usually about 30 people, lawyers, accountants, and you know, while those weren't my areas of expertise, sitting in that room at that table, it was absolutely fascinating. And what was funny about it, Dave, was that whenever we closed a deal, I can't remember a deal that didn't close anytime but between midnight and like four or 5 o'clock in the morning. These guys, you know, these folks would get in there and just grind and grind and grind. But it was
they needed to keep going.
Yeah, it was absolutely fascinating. So, you know, from there, I continued my corporate career for a couple of years. I when I went to the corporate headquarters at the time, it was in New York City. So, yeah, I was living in Manhattan, working in Manhattan. So I accepted a position with a med tech company, Becton Dickinson and Company, in northern New Jersey, and I was there not quite 3 years. And my change when I ultimately left there after such a short period of time was largely lifestyle. I was doing the reverse commute from Manhattan to northern New Jersey.
Wow.
I would literally be in the car anywhere from an hour and a half to 3 hours a day, depending on what was going on at the George Washington Bridge.
Right, right.
And, you know, long days, you know, in the office, 7:30, 8 o'clock, coming in from Manhattan. And then often, you know, you'd be there till 8 o'clock at night. And
sure.
You'd drive back into the city and do it again. But it was good in the sense that I led the entire corporate communications okay. function for the company.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a continued process of building on what I had done, but learning more.
Sure.
You know, at that point, I was working very, very closely with a new CEO
mm-hmm.
who was a great guy. And he had brought some folks, other folks in from Big Pharma
okay.
to kind of help the company.
Yep.
And it really, you know, if I can take any personal pride out of this leaving, it really kind of was a launching pad for BD mm-hmm. from that time when,
sure.
when all those folks came in.
Yep.
I mean, you know, I mean, at the time when I joined the company, their stock was trading in the 20s, 30s,
mm-hmm.
And you know now, however many years later, it's split, it's trading up at around $150
wow.
a share. I mean, you know, and the fun, I guess the fun thing too about that is, you know, I've still got some friends there.
Sure.
Obviously, corporate life, there's a lot of turnover and whatnot. But the current CEO chairman is a guy that I got to know out there, and we played golf on Saturdays and
That's
Sundays.
Great.
Yeah, so it's been good to see his progress and
sure.
what he's been able to do with the company and
Terrific.
All of that. After that happened, a friend of mine who I had done business with, who was a consulting company guy.
Mm-hmm.
Decided to move back to New York from the coast. He had gone out to the coast, started
mm-hmm.
his own shop, sold it, wanted to come
mm-hmm.
back to New York. And he looked me up and asked me to come in as a partner in the firm that he was starting up.
Okay.
And this firm dealt largely in healthcare, public policy,
mm-hmm.
and strategic communications kinds of issues. And I was there for 6 years. But again, got the chance to do some really fascinating work. One of my clients was the Columbia School of Medicine Department of Psychiatry, you know, and helping them have a better presence in
sure.
Albany, was part of that job. We represented another company, which was a medical, marketing company,
mm-hmm.
marketing and communications company. Who had an issue, a protected business free speech issue
okay.
going on in California, where the California legislature was trying to essentially stop them from doing what their business was.
Mm.
And that was an issue that I worked on for about 3 years, where we got it to where it
mm-hmm.
needed to be. And we were able to put together kind of a template piece of legislation that was then picked up in 13 other states because this was becoming a burgeoning
sure,
issue
sure.
all over the United States.
Yeah.
And that was fascinating. You know, the ability and the experience of working issues in 13 different state capitals at
yes.
one time. Particularly for someone who's fascinated by government and
right,
politics
right.
and all of that. And one thing I learned is that no two states are alike.
Okay.
Absolutely different. New Hampshire was one such example. The third largest Democratic deliberative body in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the New Hampshire. They had like 400 members of the legislature, which
wow.
meant that every square block of New Hampshire had a member of the legislature.
which kind of gets us to the amazing part about the country we live in.
Yes.
That we can, you know, yeah, we have divisions and types of things,
yeah.
but the amazing thing of a country our age.
Mm-hmm.
So diverse.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I don't lose hope
when
things get up, down, or anything like that, because that was a circumstance where I worked both sides of the aisle all the time, and there were people of goodwill on both sides of the aisle.
Right.
You know, I think it's a little bit more difficult right now than it was. But I can remember, as an example, when I was working in the assembly in the early 80s, when session would end, the staffs of the entire Syracuse Onondaga County delegation, which was largely Republican, we'd get together in Assemblyman High Miller's office every night when session wound up, and you know, we'd have drinks and we were friends.
Right.
And we were able to do things together. You know, we would work similar issues. I mean, we had our disagreements for sure, but it's just a little bit of a different ball game now than it has been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm listening to you talk through your career, every job you had, you said the fascinating thing was. So you just are fascinated by engaging in wherever you are.
Absolutely.
Which I mean, see that same passion with school boards.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's the old saying, you know, either you're going to go for money or you're going to go for experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, loosely put.
Sure.
You know, and for me, it was always about doing something, first, that I felt was interesting.
Right.
And important.
Yeah.
In whatever way.
Sure.
You know, however you define that. And I've been extremely blessed, to have had the, you know, the career I have, the career I've had, and so at any rate, with the consultancy, I was there for 6 years, and I was actually ready to do something different at the time, and because I had done a lot of work out on the West Coast, and I've got 4 siblings who live out on the West Coast, I was actually out looking to move to the Bay Area.
Okay.
Because I had done a lot of work in Sacramento and in the Bay Area, and I had many, many contacts there. And indeed, I had done some networking, and there were some opportunities that were going to be there. You know, unfortunately, my mom had a stroke.
Okay.
And at the same time was diagnosed with dementia.
Mm.
And she was in tough shape. And I'm the oldest of 6.
Okay.
And as I said, my siblings are all over.
Sure.
All over the lot. And because I was a little bit more flexible in being able to pick up and be someplace else, I decided to come back to Syracuse after 12 years in Manhattan and look after her needs.
Okay.
Which, with all those interesting things that I talked about over my work career, that was easily the most rewarding thing I ever did.
Wow, that's awesome.
Because she had 6 good years. Mm-hmm. We were able to get her good care. And when she passed, it was peaceful and
wonderful.
Contented. And so that was a big reward for changing my lifestyle completely. But when I got up here, it was late 2010, like about November. And as I got an apartment and got settled back in and all of that stuff, I started reaching out to old friends and contacts and whatnot, one of whom was a fellow by the name of Larry Cummings.
Yep.
Who happened to be at the time the executive director of the Central New York School Boards Association. So I met him. I called him. I said, "Hey, geez, let's get together and have a beer and catch up. I haven't seen you in a while." So we got together literally the day after Christmas, 2010. As we're talking, he said, "You know, I'm retiring in April. You really ought to apply for my job because, you know, all your background
everything was preparing you for it."
Yeah. And you know, I didn't know if I really wanted to go back to work just yet.
Okay.
And I kind of hemmed and hawed and whatnot. He kept pitching me on it that night. And I said, "You know what? It does sound interesting. I'll take a look into it. This is a Wednesday, I think. He said, "Well, you better hurry up and take a look because the they're closing the application process on Friday."
Wow.
So as things turned out, I was the 94th and last applicant for this job.
Wow.
Yeah.
94 applicants.
And the search committee went through the resumes. They came up with five folks, and I was one. I think I was the second or third person that they interviewed of the five. But they interviewed me and then got back to me a few days later and offered me a contract.
Terrific.
They didn't even do a follow-up interview. And that's how I got into the position.
Okay.
And Larry was right. These things were up my alley.
Yeah.
And I think largely because I've always been involved, you know, my work life has always been involved in dealing with people, dealing with the public.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what this job essentially is all about. Yeah.
So what are, you know, other than the, other than the finance part of our school issues, which is probably drives all of the issues for education, because New York State has a tremendous education system.
Yes.
You know, I will put our education, public education system up against anybody's in the country.
I agree.
And we do have the financial piece, but I also know, being on a school board, that the amount of impact that board member can have on the total financial picture is pretty minimal.
Right.
But what impact does a school board member, where can they have an impact in the educational system for their community?
Well, you know, I think that, first of all, the way that board governance is set in New York State by law is that school boards are known as body corporates.
Right.
In other words, you know, to put it into layman's terms, if you have a position, you're absolutely should disagree when appropriate, but when a vote is taken,
right,
and a decision is made, then the body supports that.
It is one position coming out of that vote.
That's exactly right. Which is a very unique dynamic in governance in the country. I would say.
Yeah.
You know.
So, what are some decisions a school board makes?
Well,
the big ones.
Certainly, the big decisions. The big decisions are the budget and spending.
So they put up a budget that the voters have to approve.
Well, yes, they do in concert with the superintendent. Actually, their first responsibility is to hire the superintendent.
Right.
Again, the way New York State governance works is that the responsibility of the school board is to hire a superintendent to manage the district. The superintendent works for the board,
right?
But then the staff of the school works for the superintendent.
Exactly.
That's how you maintain that degree of separation that you need to have that hopefully in most circumstances prevents micromanagement.
Right, right.
You know, by the board.
Right.
So, you know, that's the dynamic that we have. And you know, a further difference with school boards is that outside of the state's big five cities, New York, Yonkers, Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo, school board elections and the composition of school boards are nonpartisan.
Right.
Political parties are not involved in this, which certainly, I think, at least supports the notion of the community having a voice or reflecting the will and the thoughts of the community.
And the uniqueness of that community.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, as opposed to a party system where, you know, there are demands that come out of that as well.
So the board is, you know, the superintendent and his or her staff will propose a board for a budget first to the board.
Mm-hmm.
Then the board has to approve that.
Right.
And then that gets put to a vote for the community to vote on.
Correct.
So they have the role in that. They have the role in their primary responsibility in hiring their senior executive for their district.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Other
Well, you know,
things they do.
They are actually the representative of the community,
right.
Bigger picture, in the governance of the school mm-hmm. district, which means they have kind of a two-way responsibility of being in touch with their community
and
what the thoughts, mm-hmm. aspirations are and whatnot, and then translating those into policy, because school boards are the policy-making
right.
bodies for school districts.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I love the way you put that, because you make it a lot plainer and more simple than I would have made it. Capital projects as well.
Yes.
You know, they have to be in agreement with the superintendent to put a capital project up.
Absolutely. And there are any number of other issues that come up, things like tax certiorari suits,
sure,
and mandates that come yeah. down from Albany, usually unfunded,
right.
Which creates havoc,
sure.
With your budget.
Yeah.
Ongoing, but there's always frequent, I don't want to say disagreement, but frequent input from mm-hmm. the community.
Right.
Because schools, and this is one thing that I don't know that I ever really appreciated till I got the job, but schools, particularly the smaller the community, that's the focal point of community life.
Absolutely.
Our school district.
Sure. The facilities more and more now are open longer hours in the day so the community can use it and make use of the investment that they're making
mm-hmm.
in that district.
Yeah.
So if a person wants to get involved, what should they do?
Well, it's a very easy process. You can get a petition.
Right.
Through the school,
yep.
through the district secretary or clerk, mm-hmm. And all you need in most districts is signature of 25
of
voting members of the community.
Exactly.
That gets filed, and then there's an election
yep.
That happens the second Tuesday in May.
Okay.
Of every year. The public gets to vote on the budget, and they get to vote on
board members.
Board members.
Okay.
Which, by the way, that's another unique part of education governance and the school board process is that a community's school budget is the only government budget, federal, state, local, that residents get
exactly.
to vote on.
It's the purest form of democracy.
What I call it is the last elemental form of democracy.
Exactly.
Left. Because there's another aspect of this. While there's no specific legal mandate, the vast majority, if not all, boards in New York State allow public comment
mm-hmm.
while they're in session. So a citizen can come in and address the
yes.
elected official,
right.
You know, right on the spot,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have that dynamic at any
right.
other level
right.
of government. So it is elemental democracy,
yep.
and because of the lack of party affiliations in the non-Big Five cities, I think that the vast majority of candidates for school board. Are very, very, I don't know if pure is the right word, but they're very focused on why they're doing this.
Right, right.
You know, and, but they're very focused on the life and future of their community.
Exactly.
And they understand
sure,
the dynamic
right.
of, they understand
yep.
the dynamic of what,
Yeah.
A good education means for
exactly.
their kids and
exactly. You know, yeah. they've got the representatives a lot of times in their homes, the students.
Yes.
You know, of what's going on. And they've been to the school events, they've been to the concerts and the athletic competitions.
Right.
And it's easy to run for a board. You go in, you pick up the petition, you get 75 signatures. I would suggest that people start attending school board meetings.
Yes.
You know, so many times I would go to school board meetings even when I wasn't on the board, and there was nobody there.
Right.
And yet we all love to complain about the government. Well, get involved,
mm-hmm.
show up, be there. And the reason why I loved your professional career is all of those skills are things that you use now still.
Absolutely.
As the executive director. And,
yeah,
and all of us bring skills to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when I was on a school board, we had a 7-member school board. It was a very diverse board. We had a letter carrier. We had a teacher. We had a software engineer. We had another engineer, an insurance salesman. I was on it, you know, as a senior executive in a corporation. But we all brought something special to that.
Yes.
Conversation.
Yes.
And for me, it was an extremely rewarding experience. But again, I would encourage people, go get involved.
Mm-hmm.
You have no right to complain if you're not involved.
Agreed. And it's not the most difficult process in the world. I mean, obviously, you've got to get enough votes to
you still have to convince
win the race.
Your friends and neighbors to vote.
But it's not a hard process to get involved with. And it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
You know, it's time consuming, and you really do, however, get involved in the life, blood, time, whatever you want to call it, of the school district itself.
Yeah, and maybe we should touch on the times. You know, and it depends on the district. It depends on how many meetings they have in the school year. I know we had gone from, I think we might have met a couple times a month, then we met once a month, and I think now I'm not even certain if they meet once a month, but it depends on what the needs of the district are, and if there are special meetings that get called, you know. But a lot of times you can expect to spend a long evening.
Absolutely.
Discussing things, but in what more important things can we be discussing than the education of our kids?
You know, and the vast majority of school board members now in the 8 years that I've been in the position are there for the right reasons.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, they care about the education of the kids. You know, many school board members, their own kids are in school at the time. But, you know, it's all walks of life. It's all ages.
Yes.
I mean, we've got school board members now who have been doing this for over 30 years as an individual. In fact, you know, I was at a retirement ceremony for a school board member in one of our districts. Who had been on one district's board for 10 years, moved to a new community, sat on that board for 22 years, I think it was. So all told, about 30 years of service.
Yeah.
And he said I asked him the question at the ceremony. I said, how many meetings did you miss over that time? He said, 2, the birth of each of my children.
Very good reason to miss the meeting.
But think about
that. Talk about dedication, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, that's one other thing that's been really edifying, you know, about the experience is that, again, the vast majority of board members really care about what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll tell you, it not that I had ever lost faith in our political system, but because I haven't. But at this level and seeing it like this, you know, and to a degree, you know, the purity of it,
if you will,
you know, has been, you know, very, very invigorating.
It's almost like the uniqueness of the United States.
Yes.
Encapsulated in this little tiny grouping of a school board, being able to really have an impact in your community.
Absolutely.
And they're all unique.
Mm-hmm.
And this really, so Charlie, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. This fits right in with my series of podcasts, which are How Do We Give Back?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and are we grateful for what we have? Again, you know, none of us want to pay any more in taxes. You know, I'm always unhappy with the amount of property tax I have to pay.
Right.
But so much of that is going to a school district that is using it to educate the next generation, and there's nothing more precious than that.
Well, and on top of that, maybe I can just give you a couple of quick metrics here that hopefully put it into perspective for a lot of folks. You know, first of all, taxes can go up, but we've got a 2% property tax cap in New York State, which in reality is not a 2% cap. It's most of the time, it's under the 2% because of the machinations that go into determining what the 2% is. So that's in place. And on average, the average school district in New York State's expenses go up 4% every year.
Right. And so many of those expenses, that district cannot control.
Right.
There are certain things, and that was the frustrating thing I had when I was on the board. The things that we could really affect
right.
were minimal in terms of financial pieces.
Right. On average, 70% of the expenses of a school district are human resource costs.
Right.
You know, you're not manufacturing anything
right,
there.
Right.
You know, you're dealing with salaries, benefits, et
right.
cetera.
Exactly.
All of those things. And and you know, your only revenue source outside of the state aid is that
your tax base.
And yeah. you know, so 4% versus 2%.
Yes.
When it is 2%.
Exactly.
Hopefully that puts it into perspective a little bit.
Good. I think it will. I think
yeah.
it will, folks. So again, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. As great. You had a great great
good.
Time.
It was a great conversation.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is people really need to get involved.
Yes. Yeah, you know, public education is, as the name says, it's public,
right.
And it's open to the public,
mm-hmm.
And it's accommodating to the public
yes.
in so many ways.
Absolutely.
And it's so important for us because this is our future.
Exactly.
It has been our future. You know, public education has been around for 200 years
right.
and has not failed this republic yet.
Amen. That's a good closing point.
Yeah.
So with that, I'm Dave Freund, and this was The Next Page.